नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 21, titled Conversation Between Manu and Karadama, Text 3. Tasya vai duhita brahman devahuti vishrutaha Patni Prajapati Ukta Kardamasya Tvayang Naga Tashavai Duhita Brahman Devahutiti Vishruta Patni Prajapati Ukta Kardamasya Trayangana Tashavai Duhita Brahman Devahutiti Vishruta Patni Prajapati Ukta Kardamasya Tvayanagha Asya of that Manu Vai indeed Duhita the daughters Brahman a holy Brahmana Devahuti named Devahuti Iti, thus, Vishruta was known, Patni, wife, Prajapate, the Lord of created beings, Ukta, has been spoken of, Kadamasya, of Kadama Muni, Tvaya, by you, Amogha, Ananga, O sinless one. Translation. O holy Brahmana, O sinless one, who was spoken of his daughter, known by the name Devahuti, as the wife of the sage Kardama, the Lord of created beings. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Here we are speaking of Svayambhuva Manu, but in the Bhagavad Gita we hear about Vaishvata Manu. The present age belongs to the Vaishvata Manu. Svayambhuva Manu was previously ruling and his history begins from the Vraha age, or the millennium when the Lord appeared as the boar. There are 14 Manus in one day of the life of Lord Brahma, and in the life of each Manu there are particular incidents. The Vaishvata Manu of Bhagavad Gita is different from the Svayambhuva Manu mentioned here. Omagana Timirandasya Ganjana Salakya Chakshura Militam Rena Tasmai Sri Gurve Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vasaya Bhutale Shimali Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Pacharini Nivasesha Shunivadi Pashachade Shatarini Namo Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunijananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasati Gaura Bhaktabinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vistaya Vittalaya Shumari Vidayananda Goswami Niki Namine Tasya Vaiduhita Brahma Devahuti Vishruta Patni Prajapati Ukta Kardamasya Tvayanagam So the holy Brahmana, the sinless one, you have spoken of his daughter, known by the name Devahuti, as the wife and the sage of Kardama, the sage Kardama, the Lord of created beings. So here we're talking about the Manus, and I presume that over the last couple of days there's been discussion about the various Manus. So So each Manu is a progenitor of mankind. They start the whole thing going. And even the English word man is derived from his name, Manu. There are 14 Manus, as is mentioned in the shloka here today, in the purport. 14 in each day of Lord Brahma, as Bhanuswami would have mentioned, as I said in previous lectures. The current Manu is Vaishvata, and he's currently supposed to be alive, but we don't see him on this earth planet. So does anybody know where the current Vaishvata Manu lives? He's actually, from what I can ascertain, I tried to research this, if the Manu is currently here, where would he be? And apparently, it's a guesstimate, but he could be living in the Bhuvaloka, so that's the region between the sun and the earth, and in an atmospheric sort of way. So it's very transcendental, it's quite amazing. But he's living at the present stage. The lifespan of a Manu, or is called a Manavatar, Manvatar. And according to the Bhagavad Gita, the lifespan of one Manu is 71 Mahayugas. So that is 306,702,000 years. So that's a Mahayuga. And each Mahayuga, that's the total Mahayuga, and each Mahayuga is 4,320,000 years. So the present Manu, he's still a teenager. He's lived for 28 Mahayugas, which is 120,906,000 years. And that was stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 4:30-49. So Swayambhuva Manu and his wife Satarupa had two daughters named Akuti and Devahuti. And from their wombs, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared as two sons named Jagyamurti and Kapila, respectively. These sons were entrusted with the preaching about religion and knowledge. So there you have Kapila Muni, and later we'll go into this whole section where Kapila Dev is instructing Devahuti. But this is a really interesting section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially in regards to a Grihastha community, because it shows how a husband and wife can live as devotees. Very interesting section. So Kardama Muni was a Shakshavesha avatar. He was actually an empowered representative of God. And his wife will be described in the later sections of the Bhagavatam as well as a great yogini. She was a great yogi. And so they were great yogis. The next verse actually explains how they were great yogis. Now, what did they do? Did they set up a yoga school or something and teach people how to lose weight or to become less stressful? I don't think so. In the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains the mystic yoga process. It's not as it is today, that it's a trendy sort of thing to learn yoga and to be fit and healthy and to reduce stress. But it's a process where Krishna teaches us the proper sitting positions, the proper postures, the method of meditation, and it's under strict regulations. This is being espoused by Krishna in the sixth chapter. And the conclusion of that chapter is that Krishna says, "He who has full faith offers everything to me and worships me and is the most united with me in yoga." So if one has full faith in Krishna, that's actually the purpose of yoga. Nowadays, the yoga system has this system where the authority of the Bhagavad Gita is not even mentioned. In our yoga tuition, which we do through our different centers throughout the world, we culminate our yoga sessions by introducing people to the Bhagavad Gita, which will eventually lead them to actually understanding why they're really doing yoga. And it happens quite a lot of times. Instead, what we see is false teachers teaching students how to engage both in material sense gratification and at the same time doing their yoga and meditation and thinking that this is a good thing, it will lead them to God consciousness, and not even God consciousness, but leading them to an understanding that they become one with God. And all the while they're exploiting them by taking various fees and charges and in some cases even exploiting them sexually, which is a really sad thing. But we've seen this time and time and time again. So such cheaters of false gurus and false teachers cannot actually make much spiritual advancement. And so many people go to these different teachers. I don't know if any of you have ever seen when you go to a health food store and they have those free magazines that they hand out. Has anybody seen that? They've got all these Living Now and Living This. And well, in it, there's a classified, practically the whole thing is a classified ad for various yoga systems, various meditation teachers, and this one's coming out. Rarely, if at all, unless the devotees have put an article in there, is there anything about bhakti? Is there anything about love? Or is there anything about really finding out who God is? So actually, and people, they really like these magazines. They go through the magazines and, wow, that sounds really good. They're searching for a connection with God. They're searching for a personal relationship with God. And yet they get sidetracked to all these different bogus, in a sense, or incomplete teachings. So unfortunately, they don't make much spiritual progress. And although, and I'm an example of that, although if a person is sincere about finding out the truth, then Krishna will make the arrangements for you to actually learn the truth. And we see that time and time again. It happened with us personally. We were one of those people that went through the different magazines and we went to this guru, that guru, this guru, that guru. And ultimately, and we were cheated one time after another. And eventually we actually came to the true understanding by reading Srila Prabhupada's books, which was so enlivening, so complete, so full. There was no questions left to unanswered. And consequently, we had the great opportunity by his mercy and by his representatives to actually be able to learn the truth, to get spiritual truth. There is so much emphasis in the world today about yoga and meditation. And the main thing is, because we also teach meditation to a point, the main thing they stress is that by doing meditation, you will alleviate your stress levels. And there are so many scientific researches going on about how if you release stress, if you can reduce your stress level, then actually you'll be a healthier person. That actually 99% of our illnesses, of the weaknesses and so many things within that affect us is due to stress, which is a fact. It is a fact. So, but the majority of people learn to meditate and do yoga to alleviate their stress. And so they say the purpose of yoga is actually, the purpose of meditation is to alleviate stress, where it's not the case. It's really not the case. It's a misnomer. That really, the correct understanding is to understand that yoga leads you to the understanding that you're not this material body and that you're actually a spirit soul captured inside this body. And the spirit soul, Satchitananda Vigraha, is completely free of stress. So if we actually meditate with the right consciousness, not just to alleviate stress, but to find out who we really are, then actually, concomitant with that is that you'll be stress-free. And you see that so many times, even here in the temple, you know, a devotee, a non-devotee will come, has some inquiry about Krishna consciousness, practices the meditation of chanting the holy name of God for a period of time. Prior to them coming, they were incredibly stressful people. And all of a sudden, they just change. One thing that I noticed, one of the things that, and we see that sometimes with young people that come, and one person noticed it with me when I first came. I was 25, 26, and as a young person in teenage years, I had real trouble with acne. And they say that acne is a cause of stress. Young person growing up and hormones changing and so on and so forth. I'd only been a devotee for a very short period of time, right? And all of a sudden, you know, I mean, they used to get pimples on my back and everywhere. Anyway, after a very short time of chanting the holy name and focusing on the proper direction, not that I'm going to meditate and chant to get rid of pimples or anything, no. It was to actually find out the truth of who I am. All of a sudden, after about 6 months or so, a devotee came up to me and said, you know, all your pimples have cleared up. And I hadn't even noticed. But that's the nature of devotional service. Your stress is relieved just simply by following this process, because you're touching the reality, the truth, that you are a spirit soul. So recently I heard a so-called meditation teacher say that, and you've probably all heard this expression, that we are humans having a spiritual experience. Anybody heard that phrase? We are humans having a spiritual experience. And then he backed that up by saying, and likewise, he said, you're also a spirit having a human experience. So what he meant by that was, in other words, he was saying that humans can merge into a spiritual experience of God. And similarly, we are also spiritual energy or God, and that we can experience human life as a rasa, as a pastime. So we've come to this earth planet, we're all God, right? And somehow or other we've come to this earth planet to somehow or other experience human life, right? For what reason? I wouldn't know. If you're a God and you're Satchitananda Vigraha, completely satisfied, full knowledge, bliss, and you come down here to suffer pain, suffering, anguish, anxiety, broken hearts, birth, death, disease, old age. I can't see the point of that. Can you really? So these people are actually deluded. They're actually deluded. So the question for a devotee obviously arises, why would God want to experience a human existence and have the pain and suffering and forget God? And similarly, what enables a human being to be trapped in this human form of life in the first place? When he says that you're a human having a spiritual experience, why are you a human having this spiritual experience? It is due to the reactions for past activities. But they don't explain that. They just say, you see, you're a human having a spiritual experience. But they don't tell you that, why are you suffering? And God consciousness, Krishna consciousness, actually teaches us that. Why are we suffering? So the Srimad Bhagavatam, which we're reading here, every section of it is so vital to us. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the pure unalloyed, only teaches pure unalloyed devotional service. To who? To Krishna, to the Supreme. It is a spotless Purana. And it teaches us the direct process of how to get connected to God. It starts with, the Bhagavatam starts with Krishna tu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. This is the key. That above everything else, we should understand that nothing is better than Krishna. God is the goal for everything. And the Vedic literatures contain histories of many great yogis, like Kardama Muni, who were accomplished in full mysticism. So this Kardama Muni was an amazing personality. And because through the Bhagavatam teaches us in all different ways the ultimate means to finding Krishna. It teaches us how to find Krishna. And in his localized aspect, as Krishna within us, in the broader aspect of Krishna being everywhere, and also in his personal form as Bhagavan, as a person that we can relate to on a personal level, on a one-to-one level. And Prabhupada emphasizes that again and again in his teachings throughout the Bhagavatam, that we can actually have a personal relationship with God. That at one point in our Krishna consciousness, at one point in our Krishna consciousness, God will manifest himself to us. Now this is the creator of everything, the beautiful Lord of everything. Prabhupada has guaranteed us that if we follow this process of Krishna consciousness diligently, then there will come a time where your spiritual master will actually introduce you to Krishna. And he'll say, Bhakta so-and-so, this is Krishna. Krishna, this is Bhakta so-and-so. And Prabhupada explains, then you will shake hands with God. This actually will happen. So this is the great opportunity, and this is what the message that Prabhupada gave. So the yogis who are distracted from this path by material perfections return to the earth after death. So some yogis practice the various, and it will be explained in further sections of this section of the Bhagavatam, about the different yoga processes. And some yogis get caught up in the different mystic yogi cities and so on and so forth. And unfortunately, they have to come back again to this earth planet until they find out how to love God. So the purpose of yoga is actually to find Krishna. to be completely liberated and to completely find your connection with Krishna. So Karadama Muni and his wife Devahuti were not only yogis, but perfect yogis and devotees of the Lord. The narration of their activities starts in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, the most mature spotless Purana. They lived an incredibly long time, very, very long time, in the Satya Yuga, which was like the dawn of creation. In Satya Yuga, that was the start. And at that time, Lord Brahma, the original creator, empowered by Krishna, ordered his sons to marry and beget children, so that the universe may be populated with worthy offspring. So this was a prajapati. A prajapati was supposed to populate the earth. And so it had to be very, very powerful and pure individuals that could do that. So he commanded by Lord Brahma, Karadama practiced meditative penances on the banks of the Saraswati for a period of 10,000 years. So he was meditating and practicing his yoga process for 10,000 years. It is understood that the yoga system, in order to be rightly practiced, so in order to do this yoga properly, must be performed by persons who possess a very, very long duration of life. So when somebody starts a yoga class, the instructor should actually turn around and say, well, have you got the next 10,000 years free? Because that's what I could take. Not really. So there's no point of attempting preliminary practices of this type of yoga with different postures and different programs and stuff if you're not able to perfect it, to bring it to its ultimate perfection. Srila Prabhupada thought it was a good idea that devotees did practice some yoga. There are many, many instances where Srila Prabhupada was walking through a park when he went on his morning walk, and because in the Srimad Bhagavatam it explains that the yoga process is really for finding Krishna and it's useless to just do exercises, mundane exercises. The devotees were on a morning walk and Srila Prabhupada noticed that there were some individuals doing yoga asanas. And the devotees started ridiculing them. See, Srila Prabhupada, they're doing yoga asanas, they're not really developing. And Prabhupada turned around and said, actually, it's a good thing. They're doing some exercise. So he emphasized that it's also very good for us to do bodily exercises. If we keep it in the right framework, if we're doing these yoga asanas for the purpose of being able to serve the Lord better, so we can actually be fit and able to live a long life of service. Not that the yoga process is the aim to somehow or another attain God through this yoga process. So Prabhupada actually emphasized that the real process for realizing Krishna is in this age the chanting of the holy names of God. And it may be noted here that in the age in which Kadama Muni lived, the meditation process was actually the process for that age. So our situation is that we have to, and it's been espoused by all the acharyas, that we have to call on the holy name of God. Harinam, harinam, eva kevalam, kano, klo, nasteva, 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 katila, nita. We cannot do anything else except just call on the name of God. And recently I had some connections with different Christian organizations. And I mentioned to them that the process for this age is the calling of the holy name of God. And they said, oh, really? But is that just for the Hindus? I said, no, actually, it's for everyone. It's calling on the holy names of God. And they said, well, I said, if you actually read your scriptures, there are so many different areas in which it is espoused that for realization of God consciousness, you have to call on the name of God, whether you're a Muslim, whether you're a Buddhist, whether you're a Jew, or whether you're a Christian. And I said, because this man was a Catholic, I said, are you familiar with the different apparitions that have happened in the Catholic faith? And they said, well, yes, sometimes. I said, well, there is the celestial apparitions. And Prabhupada never discounted these. He actually was quite enthusiastic about it. You've probably heard about manifestations of Our Lady. The Christians call this manifestation that happened in places like Lourdes, Medjugorje, and the other place in Italy. Lourdes, yeah, and Fatima also. So there was a manifestation of a divine female form. And Prabhupada said that divine female form was an expansion of Radharani. When they asked him, who is this lady that these children saw? And they said it would be a divine expansion of Radharani. And so these children were advised that for you in this age, you should chant the rosary. Now the Christians, for those of you that don't know, also have japa beads. And they chant on the names of God. They chant the Our Father and Hail Mary on their beads. Anybody here that was a Christian? Yeah. You chanted on rosary beads? So rosary beads are really, and so that is the process. And she recommended if you want this divine apparition, if you want peace in society, if you don't want conflict, then, and if you want to know Jesus, then you have to call on the holy names through the rosary. And the Pope is very, the former Pope was very emphatic about that. And so it's interesting, you know, because even in the Muslim faith and Buddhist faith, as I said, that's also there. The calling of the holy names of God, even on beads. And I researched it a little bit more, and it's really interesting that actually, why is the Christian japa beads called a rosary bead? Because it's actually, they acquaint it with the purity of a rose, right? So rose, rosary. And if you actually analyze the Sanskrit word japa beads, japa, anybody know what japa is? It's rose. It's a rose. So there's all this connection, you know? And that's where the whole japa beads and rosary beads, there's a connection. Did you also know that the Christian rosary bead is exactly half of 108 beads? So they cut it down a little bit, you know, that was too much to carry around, so they cut it down to a smaller one. It's exactly half. So the process of this age to attain God consciousness is to actually call on the name of God, and you will have that realization. So, why did Dharma Muni practice meditation? It's stated in the Bhagavad Gita, and I quote, "During that period of penance, the sage Gaudama devotedly waited upon the personality of Godhead." So he didn't sit there for 10,000 years thinking, oh, I'm going to get these mystic powers, I'm going to merge with God, I'm going to be God. No, he simply waited upon, he wanted to see the personality of Godhead. That's what he waited. 10,000 years of austerity, that's what he waited. He just wanted to see God. Buddha, in the same token, had the same sort of conviction. He wanted to find out the truth, so he just sat under the tree and meditated. So, in other words, he practiced mystic yoga for 10,000 years just to please the Supreme Lord. And it's stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam that therefore he is a first-class yogi. That is a first-class yogi. He's doing these austerities, he's doing these exercises, he's doing this meditation solely and wholly because he wants to see God. So Prabhupada states in a commentary on the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and I quote, "One has to surrender unto the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead Krishna in order to achieve real success. To attain perfection of the yoga practice or meditation, one must act in devotional service, namely hearing, chanting, remembering, etc. Certainly remembering is also meditation, but upon whom must one meditate? The personality of Godhead," Prabhupada says. "He must not only be remembered, but he must hear about the activities of the Lord and chant his glories." So after engaging himself in various types of devotional service, Kardama Muni attained perfection of meditation, which is attained by those who are surrendered souls. So it's a question of being surrendered, completely giving yourself to this process. And again, Prabhupada writes, "Where there is no mention of the personality of Godhead, then where is the yoga and the surrender? And where there is no question, and where there is no meditation upon the personality of Godhead, then where is there any question of yoga practice?" So unless this yoga practice is inculcated with service to the Lord and reaching God, it's actually not really yoga. So perfection means that Kodama actually saw the personality of Godhead. The form he saw was not imaginary. See, and this is another thing that often gets thrown up. Like when I was doing my TM back in 37, 40 years ago, I was part of the TM organization. And I just received, and I mentioned this a couple of times in class, this is because it was a major turning point in my life, searching after God. I'd received the Bhagavatam and I started reading about Krishna. You remember I told you that? And in my meditations, because we would sit and meditate, and in my meditations I had these beautiful visions of Krishna. And at the end of our meditation session, we would sit together and say what our experiences in meditation were. And I said, well, you know, I have these beautiful visions of Krishna, this blue boy coming in my meditations. And they said, oh, Bert, this is just imagination, you know. And if you don't watch yourself, you'll be dancing in the streets with those Hare Krishnas. To this day, I remember so clearly the words that came out of my mouth. It said, well, maybe that's not a bad idea. And from that moment, because I surrendered to Krishna, because I actually said, well, maybe that's not a bad idea. My consciousness had changed. Well, that's... And then all of a sudden, the devotees became prominent in my life. I saw them everywhere. I saw them in... Isn't that? As soon as you make that direction, all of a sudden, you're walking through town sometime and you hear... Ah, it's the devotees. Or you're at some bookshop and somebody gives you a Bhagavad Gita by Prabhupada or somebody, you know. Once you've made that little adjustment, that's it. So that happened. So Krishna's not imaginary. Krishna's real. Krishna's real. And recently I heard from a very dear friend, a very senior devotee, who had lost faith in Krishna consciousness. And he actually espoused that actually all this Krishna consciousness, the whole lot, the stories about Krishna, stories about Lord Nrisimhadev, everything, the deities and everything, it's all just imagination. It's all just a figment of your imagination. You're just making this up. It's just a made-up thing. This was a senior devotee who had got to this understanding. Very amazing. Very frightening, actually. You know, because it's sad when a devotee comes under the influence of Maya and forgets the reality of Krishna consciousness. And Maya is so strong. Maya is incredibly strong. And if one allows a little weakness to come into his life, his or her life, in this process of yoga, this yoga that we're performing, this devotional service, she can carry our mind and intelligence away. To the extent where we think, actually, I was deluded, it's all just imagination, it's all fake. And so... And Krishna allows that to happen, you know, because that's our desire and away we go. So it's not that one concentrates his mind on some arbitrary or imaginary form in meditation. We actually feel we have to connect with Krishna. There's actually an interesting analogy that Hridayananda Maharaj makes in that when we're influenced by Maya, and all of us at certain times in our life have this process going on, is this really real? You know, Maya comes in at all different times, you know. But she comes in, especially at the times when we're weak in our yoga practice. When we've dropped the process of hearing and chanting. Or we're not focusing as much on our chanting. Or we're not focusing as much or making enough effort to actually read Prabhupada's books. To hear some of his lectures. And to preach Krishna consciousness. It's all well and good that we have our knowledge and we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam and we're coming to the temple and we're doing all these different things and we're learning shlokas and stuff. That's our yoga process. But part of the yoga process is also to outreach to people. That you actually make an endeavor to somehow or other talk to someone and alleviate their suffering and sadness as well and talk to them about Krishna. So this is incredibly important. And Hridayananda Maharaj says is that when all else fails, so when we're really in the pits of despair of not being convinced, Hridayananda Maharaj says, go back to the manual. So when Krishna consciousness is not working for you, you know when you've got an appliance, like I had this alarm clock and we had to change the alarm clock back to 1 hour, you know what I mean?
And I'm sitting there with this thing, and it's, well, which buttons do I press? And I'm pressing the damn buttons, and it wouldn't go back. And in the end, I just had to search, where's the manual for this thing, you know? So I had to research. Oh, that's what I have to do. So Ridhi Nanda Maharaj points out that the Bhagavad Gita is our manual, is the maintenance manual. If doubts and illusion and Maya's influence is getting you, go back to the manual. You're losing your connection. Read the manual and go back to, oh, yeah. Sarvadhamma parijaka. Dehino saminyata dehe. I'm not the body. Krishna wants me to serve him. This treatise, this manual, the Bhagavad Gita, holds everything for us. Do that. Grab it with all your might and read it, and you'll be back on board. Oh, that's how we fix it up. That's how to reestablish my faith. It's just so clear. It's Krishna's words and the pure devotee's purports. And straight away, we align ourselves and we're back doing the proper yoga process. So, the blissful form of the Lord is described in the Bhagavatam. This was Kardama Muni's, what Kardama Muni saw after his 10,000 years of meditation. Kardama Muni, and this is a quote, Kardama Muni saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his eternal form, effulgent like the sun. The Lord was wearing a garland of white lotuses and water lilies. He was clad in spotless yellow silk, his lotus face fringed with a slick of dark locks of curly hair adorned with a crown of earrings. He held his characteristic conchon disc and mace in three of his hands and played with a white lily while smiling. His smiling captivated the hearts of all the devotees. Having set his lotus feet on the shoulder of Garuda, he stood in the air with a golden streak on his breast and famous Kastuba gems suspended from his neck. This is the description given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's not a product of material energy. Kardama did not meditate for 10,000 years in order to see some imaginary thing that his mind had concocted. Krishna actually comes. Rather, he attained the level of perfection by which the Lord was pleased to reveal himself to him. This is the point. He never reveals himself to impersonalists. He never reveals himself to those bogus cheaters who are presenting some wrong form of yoga. I was asked one time when I was giving a lecture at a yoga class, this is really, you know how we present Krishna consciousness to different places at times. And you really put yourself out there. And this was a yoga class. These are all yogis. They've been doing all their asanas and they're doing their pranayams and everything, right? And I was explaining how the purpose of yoga is to actually learn to get in touch with Krishna, to get in touch and to actually be with Krishna. So they gave the $64,000 question, you know. So, Bhakta, they asked me, have you ever seen or connected with God? You say that this is the case, that Krishna consciousness will connect you with God. You've been practicing for so long, you know, a number of years, not 10,000 years, but have you had any connection with Krishna? And completely, I don't know where it came from, but Krishna just really guided and directed me. He said, I see Krishna every day. Everybody just stunned, you know. Oh, I see Krishna every day. Every time I go to the temple, I see the beautiful divine forms of the deities. They said, yeah, but that's just the deities. I said, have you ever done any deity worship? Have you ever experienced a connection with a deity? And then I explained to them that I get an opportunity, and at that stage I was doing more than I'm doing now, I get an opportunity to actually worship Gaur-Nitai, who are an incarnation of Krishna himself, most merciful for this age. And I said, I get an opportunity to go there and I render service to them, and I get an opportunity, one of the things that I have to do, you know about this because you're a pujari, one of the things I have to do is I have to hold Lord Chaitanya's and Lord Nityananda's hand and I have to paint the tilak on his forehead. And if I'm in really good consciousness, that holding of Lord, even just thinking about it, I'm getting goosebumps, even holding Lord Chaitanya's hand and putting on his tilak is just like the most personal experience that you can have. Now you can describe that in any way that you can. Yeah, well, that's your imagination, this is not... But it's so much deeper than anything that's imagined. And you connect with God. You know, because all of a sudden, this entity, this minute little ant, this speck in the whole of creation, is connecting with the Supreme Lord. You know, just by holding his hand. And sometimes, some of you that may have deities at home as well, you know, sometimes, it rarely happens, but when it happens, it's so joyful. You may be doing puja to your deity, and all of a sudden you see the deity's little eyes looking straight at you. And you go, isn't it? Krishna captures you. Just all of a sudden you realize, actually, Krishna's really there. And these are the things that keep us going. These little snippets. You know, sometimes, you know, you're worshipping your Jagannath at home, and all of a sudden you look at Jagannath and he's big smile at you, and you go, Jagannath's smiling at me, you know. It's God is smiling with you. God wants you to come to him. This is the most powerful thing. So, and then also in your meditations, in your chanting, when you're chanting the holy names of God, how is it that we can keep on chanting day after day, week after week, year after year? Because we get a little bit of taste. Every now and again, we actually feel Krishna is with us. Isn't it? We feel it. And we want it again and again. So Krishna is really real. So the people that I was speaking to were really blown out. And a lot of them actually came to the temple after that, which was really enthusing, you know. So Krishna is this process that Srila Prabhupada has given us, this whole process of chanting the holy name, deity worship, association with devotees, wonderful knowledge being disseminated by incredibly advanced devotees. It's just so wonderful. It's incomparable to anything else. And this is the perfect yoga system. It's not voidism. It's not contrary. It's a perfect yoga system. And when one sees the personality of Godhead in his eternal form, you're completely satisfied. And as I said, at one point, you will have a personal connection with Krishna. Prabhupada saw Krishna everywhere. Prabhupada saw Krishna everywhere. He is a complete, pure devotee of the Lord. But that's, you know, that's not to say that we can't achieve that as well. That's what he said to us. This is also available to you if you apply the process. So when Kadama Muni saw the Lord, his transcendental desires were fulfilled. He fell to the ground with his head bowed and offered obeisances. The point of yoga is not to see a void, but to see the spiritual form of the personality of Godhead. That's what we're there for. Clearly, Kadama was in the most advanced stage. His next words that were spoken unto the Lord, therefore, are difficult to understand for a layperson. So here's this great yogi, this great mystic, who for 10,000 years has been meditating on just getting to see the Lord, right? And then he says to the Lord, God is there, and he says, desires of marrying a girl of like disposition, who may prove a veritable cow of plenty in my married life, I too sought the center of your lotus feet to satisfy my lusty desires. This is what he said to Krishna, Vishnu. It's startling to hear a yogi who was supposed to be free from all attachments to material life by meditating in a solitary celibate penance for many thousands of years and attaining the sight of the personality of Godhead and asking for a nice wife. That's what he did. He asked for a nice wife. But the explanation reveals to us that Kadama Muni was even more exalted than we have so far understood. Not only did Kadama Muni not actually seek marriage out of a lustful desire, but his desire was to serve Krishna's desire. This is the key. As is stated in the Bhagavatam, I shall accept this nice chaste girl as my wife until she bears a child born out of the ray of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then I shall accept the life of devotional service which is practiced by the most perfect human beings. I know that this is the desire of Lord Vishnu, and that is the process to free, and that process is free of envy. A Krishna conscious marriage, as we'll read about further on in these verses, between Kadama Muni and Devahuti, is an example for all of us, especially those of us that live in the Grihastha life. Our marriage life should be one of working together to attain this yoga fulfillment. And it's really interesting sometimes when you have an opportunity to bring these things to the fore. This week, I had an interfaith seminar that I had to give to a group of different religious organizations. And the topic that they gave me was early childhood in Vedic culture. So what really stumped them was the fact that a devotee couple could actually practice the samskara for creating a child. And I explained the process that we have to chant so many rounds before we actually have intercourse and so on and so forth. And I would, when I explained that you have to chant 50 rounds, for a Krishna conscious, for a Hare Krishna devotee, it's 50 rounds in, each. And then you perform the act with the good consciousness of wanting to beget a really nice Krishna conscious child. And when I looked around the room, all their mouths were open, you know, like, a young married couple, you know, and you're sitting there chanting before. Anyway, it was really interesting. So they found it very difficult to understand, and yet they understood the purity of it and were very, very, very respectful, actually. So as we read about Kadama Muni and how he prayed to the Lord as if he was under the grip of lust and desired the Lord's mercy for an ordinary marriage, it wasn't really an ordinary marriage. By speaking in this way, Kadama, who was actually a liberated sword, brought out all the for all the future readers and students of the Srimad Bhagavatam the many significances and clarification of marriage within devotional service. That's this section of the Bhagavatam. At his request, the Lord was able to show that man should pray to the Supreme Personality for whatever he wants, whether it be liberation, devotional service, or the fulfillment of material desires. So Krishna actually says, and Prabhupada also in reading Lilamrita, he says, you know, whatever you really desire, just bring it towards Krishna. Material desires should be satisfied in accordance with the will of the Supreme Lord and the Vedas, and there are prescriptions for a married man, married women, and regulated sense gratification. We all know that, and that was described in the previous verses where we were talking about marriage and regulative principles in marriage. Even if one has lusty desires, if he takes his desires to the Supreme Lord and abides by his will, he will get far more than he could imagine. And he will eventually gain spiritual purification and association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada says that. So ultimately, it's God. It's what God wants. In everything, we surrender to God. Man proposes, God disposes. So it's whatever God wants. Srila Prabhupada again. If one can accept what the Lord offers as his share, then he will find it a richer share than he had ever dreamed of attaining by his own endeavors. So if you make that endeavor in Krishna consciousness, you know, just like, say, Muchukunda Prabhu is entering married life and he's traveling over to another part of the world, he's going to be presenting Krishna consciousness in his unique way, through creativity, through art. And it's very appealing. The people that he comes across when he does his graffiti on the walls, you see people taking photographs of themselves behind a picture of Jagannath. This is amazing. This is an amazing thing. So this young man who has a desire to be an artist, to be creative, not in a mundane way, but he's dovetailing it, he's turning it and asking the Lord to encourage him in his artwork, and consequently that artwork is a great boon, and is pleasing the Lord. So he's traveling now to another part of the world with his wife. They're going to live a good Krishna conscious life, and we want him to be supported. So tonight he's offering some of his absolutely brilliant artwork for the public, for you to take home. It's a little bit of his own Krishna consciousness that he's going to disseminate to all of us, and it's going to be auctioned off at Gopal's tonight. So we're asking everybody, please help him out, this young Grihastha couple, and see if we can sell a couple of his paintings tonight. Muchukunda Prabhu ki jai. So Prabhupada says the example of Kadama was an austere penniless yogi with no facilities for gaining a beautiful wife. You know, he was a simple yogi. Yet since he prayed to the Lord for a wife, he was granted the most beautiful and gorgeous princess in the world. This is Kadama Muni. Lord Vishnu said to Kadama Muni, Having come to know what is in your mind, I have already arranged for that for which you have worshipped me through the discipline of the mind and the senses. My dear Rishi, O leader of the living entities, for anyone who serves me in devotional service by worshipping me, especially a person like you who have given up everything unto me, there is no question of frustration. That's where the stress goes. That's real stress release. Krishna says, oh, you got that problem? Get rid of it. If we just surrender to him. It is stated that the Lord gives his devotee all pleasure and that he answers all his desires. Krishna will fulfill all your desires. Although he never awards anything which may be detrimental to your devotional service. Only things which will increase in your devotional service. The Lord then outlined his plan for benedicting Kadama with perfect wife, as Swayambhuva Manu and his wife Satarupa's daughter Devahuti. And from here on in we read about the amazing union of those two great individuals and their life together. It's a wonderful, somebody should make a movie about this, because it's just any part of the Bhagavatam you could make such fabulous movies about. So that's the life, and this is just an interlude or a prelude to what's the next verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Any comments or questions at all, Prabhu? Yes, Prabhu. Are you reading enough?
Recently started reading more, 20 pages a day, but before that it was very minimal.
If you can continue reading, Prabhupada said, I didn't make it a regulative principle when you took initiation that we read, but actually it could have been. He actually wanted that the devotees at least read an hour of his books a day. So we have to read. We have to connect our intelligence with this divine instruction. If you actually do that, if you do read, and if you're a genuine person following nicely, you know, you can't help but preach. You have to preach. Because it's like that analogy that Prabhupada gives about the panacea for the disease. If you find a panacea for a disease that everybody has got, and you're liberated from that disease, you are a heartless person if you don't give that to someone else. So if you read the prescribed amount, at least an hour a day, and it doesn't mean that Prabhu, I can't fit it in the time. You know, I haven't got an hour of time. I've got the kids, I've got to get my husband off this, I've got to make garlands, I've got to do that, I've got to do that. It's just 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there, 15 minutes there, you know, just before you go to bed, 10 minutes here, so on and so forth. You've got a mobile phone, you've got Vedabase on there, just, you know, when you're waiting in an office, you're waiting somewhere, or you're at shopping, you just click, and another section. And they're all rockets of intelligence, you know. They all go through and straight to the heart. And so when you imbibe yourself in this preaching spirit, in this knowledge, you develop a preaching spirit. And you have to preach. There's nothing you can do about it. It's like you become obsessed. Where am I going to do this? But it doesn't necessarily mean I have to grab a book bag and go out and do book distribution. That's one. That's the top. But there are many different ways that we can preach. You know, you can see somebody struggling, some destitute person. Oh, there's so many different things. And you know, even in your preaching, how would you like it to go into an alleyway and paint some mundane painting? What sort of juice do you get out of that? Nothing. But to do Jagannath or some preaching aspect that you've done, that's preaching. We're not even aware of the impact that you have when you outreach. And Prabhupada was really always emphatic. Number one, when you read his books, he said, you get enthusiasm. And enthusiasm is the driving force in devotional service. Enthusiasm is the driving force. You have to be enthusiastic. You have to be up. You have to be enlivened. You have to have that zeal. You know? If you haven't got that zeal to preach, go back to the manual. There's something wrong. Read something more. And if you haven't got that zeal for preaching, then what's happening is that Myra's tentacles are coming in. That devotee that I was mentioning, that older devotee, had stopped preaching. Consequently, he stopped reading. He stopped believing. He lost faith. And he stopped austerity. And consequently, it all just became a phantasmagoria for him. He wasn't allowed to enter into that relationship with the deity, with Krishna, anymore. Isn't it sad? He could be revived at any time, but at that point of time. So we need spiritual enthusiasm. Prabhupada said, and he said, each and every one of us have our God-given intelligence. Each and every one of us is different. And each and every one of us will come up with different ideas as to how to preach. What can I do? Where I am, serving prasadam, you know, Mantra Lounge. What can I do? How can I encourage a person? You see some person coming in that's a bit down. You feel like a bit down today. And Krishna will enliven. Oh, that person, you've got to speak to them. Talk to them about Krishna. Don't keep it to yourself. Outreach. We're walking down the shops in Coles or Myers or wherever, and you strike up a conversation with someone. Just be friendly. Just introduce yourself. Hi, you come here shopping often? Yeah, no, no, just like that. You know, give a book. Like we're going to be getting in a week or two time, we're getting the 50th anniversary magazine. Now this is something that we haven't had as a movement for a long time, which is a document which presents all the different aspects of Krishna consciousness so a layperson can actually appreciate it, right? So this is going to be here. What we're asking the devotees to do is buy a quantity from the temple, 5, 10, 100, it'll cost $1 each, and give it to your neighbors, give it to your friends, give it to the kids' school teachers, give it to the policeman that pulls you over for a parking fine. Give it to anybody, you know. Thank you very much, have a document, you know. Give it, because you don't know when that bomb is going to go off in them. Every single person on this planet is searching after God. Every single person on this planet. And we are the distributors of this love of God. We are the tentacles of Srila Prabhupada. We are the outreach. But you have to maintain enthusiasm. You can't be lethargic about your devotional service. Does that make sense? So, on that, as a nice segue, we've got a meeting after breakfast about, and there's a notice on the notice board, about the 50th anniversary functions that we're going to have here in Melbourne. Right? We're wanting to have some events. Now, quarter of the year is almost gone. Right? We have to think of ways of how we can promote the 50th anniversary. This once-in-a-lifetime event. You know, it's a golden jubilee. This is a major thing for the Westerners. For us, every day is a golden jubilee. But we want to capitalize on this 50th. When something reaches 50, the secular world goes, well done, that was really good, you've been 50. So 50 years of Hare Krishnas. We have to promote that. So I'm looking for volunteers to help me in this, and I'm looking for ideas. We've got a meeting at 10 o'clock in the dining room. Anyone that has a little idea of how they can promote and enthuse and then bring Krishna consciousness into the lives of other people, I would be really glad for your assistance. It is so needed. Let's take advantage of this opportunity, you know, and let's really work at that here in Melbourne. It's now a quarter of the year is gone. For the next three quarters of the year, let's really work on it. On the 13th of July is the day that Prabhupada signed the documentation of ISKCON. So we'll have a major festival that weekend or something. But in the meantime, there are so many other things that we can think of that we can do. It doesn't necessarily have to cost a lot of money, but Let's work on it. So I'm imploring you all, if you can come, please come at that time. Any other comments or questions at all, Prabhus? Yes, Prabhu. It's like a reflection of the sun. It's like a spark. Even in Christian doctrine, we just had Easter, and they're coming up to what's called Pentecost. And Pentecost is the time when the apostles of Jesus actually became enlightened, and they say the Spirit entered their heart. Basically, he was there all the time, but it was the realization of Chaitaguru. Right? Krishna as Chaitaguru. So that enlivened them. So yeah, it's a little spark of the sun, which is compared to the sun. It's the same thing. It is personal. Krishna personally comes with you. Comes and has been with you all your sojourn for all so many, many lives. So a personal form of the Lord, a small part of the Lord, a small sun, is residing with you in this material body. And whether we were an ant, whether we were a tree, whether we were a baboon, or now a human being, Krishna is there with you all the time. Does that make sense? Any other comments or questions? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.